Morning, folks. Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIWFM. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. I have a guest across the way. As we've been talking over the past month or so with the three of the five, this is the third of the five candidates for Fairfield Mayor. I extended invitations to each candidate back in writing. I want to make sure that so that the people know that so that nobody says they ended up didn't get invited. Extended invitations to all five mayoral candidates back in early February, and we've had two on the show, a third one today, and we'll see if we hear from the other two as time gets closer to the election. But joining me on the show, Tim Sullivan. Good morning, Tim. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Bruce. Good to be here.
Well, thanks very much for coming out. I appreciate it. You and I have met, I think, once, maybe before here today, but welcome to Fairfield, I guess. Welcome back. This isn't a new town to you, is it?
Not hardly.
Tell me about your, give me a little bit of the, give me the Tim Sullivan story. Tell me your background, and then we'll get into the political stuff. What do you say?
Well, I was born in Mount Vernon, and I'm a grandchild of L.A. Blackburn, who came to Fairfield in 1904.
Okay.
And he had four daughters. One was Grace Sullivan. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know that name. She's going to be 101 at the end of April.
Is that right?
That's one reason I came back.
Well, wonderful. And, congratulations to her. She looks great. It's spry.
Yeah, her doctor says she's amazing. So well, that's good.
That's all you can hope for at that age, I would think.
It's been a treat to come back and spend this time with my elderly mother. And I'm in charge of her physical and mental health. My brother takes care of everything else.
Uh-huh.
And so I spent a lot of time with her, and it's been a very worthwhile experience.
Well, that's great. That's great.
So anyway, went through FCHS, played on the Mules, got to play first ring on football for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah?
We didn't have winning seasons, but that was in the days of Dennis Bundy, which may not mean
Coach
much
Bundy?
To Coach Bundy.
Sure.
He was an honorable mention All-American in his day.
Yeah.
And he and I were best friends in those days, as were Tommy Matthews and I.
Oh, no kidding.
Tommy was on the team, too. And Chuck Griswold was a year behind us.
Okay, so that means your year class of 65.
That's correct.
Okay.
So, and then as a child, I liked playing the sandbox with the construction toys, and that has stayed with me my entire career.
Is that right?
That's right.
That's what brings you to become an engineer.
That's how I knew, right? And so then I went to engineering school at Rose Holman in Terre Haute. It was Rose Polytechnic back then.
Yeah.
Graduated civil. Picked up an ROTC officer's commission in the Corps of Engineers.
Okay.
And then through a series of circumstances, right in the middle of the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And through a series of circumstances, I was offered an officer's educational delay and got an MBA.
Okay.
At Indiana State. That's in the years that Larry Bird was active.
Nice.
Part of the world.
Yeah.
And so then I did a short tour in the military and came back and went to work for the state of Illinois, which I had worked for in the summers for several years prior to that, both as an inspector and as a summer resident engineer.
As the engineer, what did you what were your specializations?
Heavy civil construction.
Okay.
And
basically building roads, that kind of thing? Or?
Well, yeah, and it evolved way beyond that. So back when they were building the big Wabash River Bridge on 64,
right.
I was an inspector for the state of Illinois.
Okay.
Inspected a lot of the concrete, the heavy steel across the river, a lot of the rebar. It was my job. I ran survey crews. And I did that for the state until 1971. Then I worked for a contractor who at that time was the third largest interstate paving contractor in Illinois, who built many of the sections from 57 to the bridge.
Oh, really?
And so I worked all across that stretch. They didn't do all of them, but they did many of them. And that particular company is called Standard Paving, and they built bridges, had a heavy earth moving operation, did all the heavy drainage structures. I mean, they did it all.
Yeah.
And they were a concrete paving.
So you've basically worked with government in one capacity or another for probably your entire adult life.
That's correct. Probably 80. I put it in my Outlook report that about 80% of my work was governmental tax-based type of construction work.
Yeah.
And then evolved from there I've developed all kinds of experience and specialties in heavy civil construction, dams, roads, bridges, tunnels, coal mines, heavy excavations, heavy utilities, water and sewer systems, water and sewer plants. Actually owned and operated a small asphalt paving operation in Arkansas for a while.
Okay.
So a broad background of experience to work my way up the chain.
Tell me about your family. We kind of skipped over a little bit of your own family. You mentioned your mother.
Okay.
But I'm talking about your wife and children.
Okay. Well, let me go back, if you don't mind. My grandfather.
This is your show, man.
My grandfather was L.A. Blackburn.
If we run out of getting stuff, out of time, Tim, it's your fault.
Okay. L.A. Blackburn came here in 1904.
Yeah.
And he was the owner of the poultry business.
Okay.
That started Fairfield and gave Fairfield a base of industry. And he also brought in a Sheffield construction, Sheffield manufacturing. He was very instrumental in that, and that was in the 20s.
Right.
Sheffield was in the 30s. Ferguson was in the 20s. He brought them in. And then he, at one point, was president and chairman of Airtex.
Right.
Way back.
Early. Yeah, very early.
Now, he was mayor between 31 and 35. And that's in the middle of the Great Depression,
right,
when people were in bread lines and all that. And he was service-oriented to the community. And he was the initiator and founder of Fairfield Memorial Hospital.
Yeah.
Which was opened in 1952. So he had three daughters. My mother is the third of the three, and she was very active in the Fairfield community for many years, very instrumental in Frontier. She's a primary fundraiser for Frontier. She was
get up going.
She was in charge of Meals on Wheels for over 30 years.
She started that, didn't she?
One of the
founders of it?
Yes, she did, and she managed it for all those years. I know, because when it snowed like it is today, I got to go help her carry the food in to the folks who were being serviced by that organization. So it was there's a long history of community service. So when I came back out of the military, I was working on the interstate and I had a major construction accident, got severely injured, and I was out for about 6 months. Just about lost my left foot.
Oh dear!
Remarkable, I still have one. And during that period of time, my mother said, Janie Smizer is a teacher at Northside, and my mom was a teacher, and said, she was your classmate, you ought to take her out. Now, I remind Janie of that all the time.
Is that right?
Yes, I do. Because
So Janie can blame her mother-in-law.
That's right. That's I bring that up to her now and then. And the Janie is the youngest of the 10 Smizer children.
Wow.
And Frosty and Larry Smizer.
I didn't realize there were that many.
Yeah. Frosty and Larry Smizer taught.
Sure.
And for years.
Yeah.
Frosty's passed. Larry's in retirement and still subs all the time.
Yeah.
He's approaching 50 years out of Jasper.
Is that right?
Yeah,
he's out there all the time.
Yeah, he's amazing. So, and on the first date, I took her out, and that was in December the 31st, 1972.
You're putting a lot of pressure on yourself taking somebody out on New Year's Eve for the first time.
I know. wait till the punchline.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I told her, I guess you know, we'll be married a year from now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You told her that on the first date?
On the first date. And she said, when she tells, she's present, I look at her and she says, and I thought when I walked back in the house that he tells all the girls that. So
maybe you did.
But what happened was,
yeah,
that was December 31st, 1972, and we were married on December 22nd, 1973.
Is that right?
That's right.
Well, congratulations. So 44 years of marriage this year then, right?
That's right. Coming
43, up. Congratulations.
43
kids?
Now.
Kids?
We have two kids, both grown. The oldest son is an Air Force Academy graduate, F-16 fighter pilot.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all kinds of combat tours under his belt in the Middle East. He's recipient of the McKay Trophy.
Oh, really?
Are you familiar with what that is?
I think so.
It's in the Smithsonian. It's about 4 feet tall, and it has it's to recognize the major air accomplishment by the military in a given 12-month period.
I was thinking that J.P. Boster also might have been involved in that at some point. Their Fairfield boy.
I don't know if he's on the McKay.
May not be.
Could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
He flew.
I know
he flew.
Yeah.
He flew F-15s.
Right.
So And so he's advanced through the ranks, and he's a lieutenant colonel, being on the boards for a full colonel, and he's finishing his doctorate.
How about that?
And he's got several master's degrees.
Kids?
And he has three girls.
Okay.
That we're very close to.
Good.
And then
where are they now? Where's your son based?
They're split.
Is he still getting around? Or?
No, they're split. Okay. His wife is a major in the Air Force, and she's on the boards for lieutenant colonel. And she's a public affairs officer, and she's now at Command Staff College at Fort Leavenworth.
No kidding. I bet you that keeps her.
Now, that's Air Force in an Army Command Staff.
Yeah.
But those Command Staff Colleges for the different services have similar course
and they,
profiles.
Correspond to each other.
Yeah. And so, and then, and Larry is in D.C. at the Eisenhower School for Strategic Total Theater Warfare.
Wow.
And he's being trained for that.
And your other child?
The other child is Ken Sullivan, and he's a PhD in civil and a tenured professor at Arizona State, and he has four children.
How about that?
So we've worked, education's been important. From my grandfather.
I was going to say, it kind of seems like you've got all kinds of alphabet. Well, you've got an alphabet suit behind the whole family.
That's right. And it started with my grandfather, L.A. Blackburn.
Is that right?
That's right.
Where'd he go to school?
He went to business school for 18 months in Indianapolis when he was 18 years old.
Bobby doggone. I've got Tim Sullivan here. We're talking about we're getting to know him as well as we're going to get to know what his thoughts are and why he kind of wanted to run for mayor. You are listening to the Bruce Dickey Show on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM. We'll be back in just a bit.
Slamming rubber, squealing gears, a jamming local country station. Just a blare out on a radio. Pick him up at 7 and they're heading to the rodeo. Mama's on the front porch screaming out her warning. Girl, you better get your red head back in bed before the morning. Clock the show is in, but the fun is just beginning. She knows he's anticipating, but she's gonna keep him waiting. Grab a bite to eat, and then they're heading to the honky tonk. But loud crowds and line dancing just ain't what they really want. Drive out to the boondocks and park down by the creek, yeah, where it's George Strait real late, and that's a cheek of cheek. Ain't going down till the sun comes up. Ain't giving in till they get enough. Go around the world in a pickup truck.
Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in. It is 9:27, 33 degrees. I'm just notified by the athletic director at Fairfield that the baseball game today has been postponed, hopefully until tomorrow, against Weber. And also there's a game scheduled against Grayville tomorrow. They're going to try to play split squad games, going to have two games for the Fairfield Mules, and I'll have put all that on the internet here pretty shortly. But again, today's baseball game has been canceled. joined by Tim Sullivan. He's running for mayor of the city. When did you move back to town, Tim?
Jane and I bought a place in Sisney when we got married, and I think we left about 1976.
Uh-huh.
And started working for heavy civil construction companies and worked all over.
I said, when did you move back to town?
3.5 years ago.
Okay.
From Denver.
Back to Fairfield. Tell me a little bit what, after having been back in town for, like you say, 3.5 years, what got you into the mind and wanting to run for mayor? What is driving you to run for mayor?
Well, there's three reasons, genetics, prayer, and a Rotary motto.
Mm-hmm.
The genetics started with my grandfather.
Yeah.
And there's a whole history of service both to the community and to the military and my lineage. Prayer was, I'm a pastor at a little country church, a lay pastor, and been a teaching, practicing Christian substitute preacher for many, many years. And so God answers prayer in three ways. Yes, no, move ahead, wait and see.
Less, yes, no, or we'll see, isn't it?
Yeah. Move ahead, wait and see.
Oh, okay.
That's an active waiting rather than a passive waiting. Meaning,
okay.
Meaning you, if you're looking for a job, sitting in the Lazy Boy watching the soaps is
you're not going to get a job.
That's called passive.
Yeah.
And if you're active, you're out there beating the streets, getting your resume out, doing all that kind of stuff. That's the difference. And the last one's Rotary, which is service above self, their international motto. And so I really struggled with whether to do this or not. I'm not doing it because I need a job.
Yeah, no axe to grind or something.
Axe to grind. It's just I had a lot of the Rotary guys encouraging me to do it because I had the background, the business background, to be able to manage the city. And the city's a $23 million business with 76 employees.
Right.
A lot of people don't understand that. It is a fairly large business, the second largest business in the county, I understand. Hospital's the biggest since Air Texas' departure. So for those three reasons, or the last reason is Rotary was the last reason, service above self. So I decided that I would offer my experience and background, education, to serve the city. Now, like everybody else, I read the papers, and I knew that Fairfield was in trouble with Air Texas' departure and the economic depression in the state of Illinois. And so there were problems that to be dealt with, so I offered my services. Not a politician, never run for public office before, have managed lots of stuff, lots of companies, but have just offered my service, and that's why I'm doing it. So I'm approaching it a little differently than my competitors. I'm a businessman. It's what I did. It's what I know how to do. The Outlook article that some people read and some didn't because it was too long.
Yeah, that's me. Sorry.
I know. I've heard that before.
I suspect.
I say sorry about that.
Well, that's all right.
But the fact is the detail is in there, and the conclusions are all there. And I spent many, many hours interviewing Mickey Bora and Chuck Griswold. And
That was going to be my next question. Give me the – I mean, you're obviously a well-educated person, and you've been working all your life. What kind of thought process goes into determining, I'm going to put my name out there? What was the one thing that made you decide you're going to do it? The talking with Mayor Bora, the talking with Mayor Griswold, what?
No, the genetics, like I said, the driven genetics in my family to serve the community for generations, over 100 years.
Yeah.
My prayer life.
Yeah.
I feel like this is what I'm supposed to do. At least I didn't go told no. If I don't win, well, that'll be a no, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
And if I win, it becomes a yes. But meanwhile, I'm putting my best foot forward and offering my services and my experience to the city of Fairfield. And I think all of us, particularly in Fairfield, which is in economic distress, need to serve their community and service above self. It's more important than what I want. I mean, I could go squirrel hunting all the time.
Yeah.
During season, of course.
Sure.
And I'm a firearms buff, and I like to do all those kind of things. I got a wood shop. I've got things that I can do. But I felt called to do this, and that's why I'm doing it.
What'd you learn from Chuck and Mickey?
We'll start with Mickey first. Three terms, 12 years. And he was a general superintendent on Air Tex, worked with my dad when Air Tex was in its prime. Air Tex in its prime was 79 to 81. They had about 1,100 employees.
Right.
So when I talked to him about it, the time he was mayor, actually Fairfield was flush. The surplus was way up there. I've heard some big numbers. I haven't verified them. But he was able to do major projects. Some citizens have problems with some of the things he did. He knows that. But his heart was right. I determined that my conversation, he asked me point blank. I says, I may agree or disagree with some of the projects you did, but there's no question that your heart was right for the city of Fairfield.
Yeah.
And a lot of people understand that about him. Chuck Griswold, was an executive far beyond what I was or am. And he wanted me to run, and I, he was a year behind me,
right.
So we knew each other. And we renewed our friendship and relationship, and we think alike as senior business people. And so we were able to relate, and so he encouraged me to consider it. And then the Rotary folks pressured me pretty hard.
Did they?
Yeah. They thought that I had the wherewithal, and it'd be good if they had somebody in the mayor slot, because those are business people, and they recognize that Fairfield's in trouble. and probably financial trouble because they were seeing the news reports about the cash and all the rest of it. So they were encouraging me, and from all that, I went through the genetics and the prayer and the motto, and I decided to run to serve. So my campaign's different than my fellow candidates. I've gone through detailed analysis of Fairfield's financial history for the past 6-7 years, and with Mickey, he said that he said I could use his name. I showed him a draft report of what was in Outlook and took him through it, and he agreed with it. And he centralized on what he thought the problem was. And, of course, I worked with Chuck at length. He gave me access as a citizen to
what he could.
And so he did, and I used that information and compiled a pretty detailed financial report on where Fairfield's been, where it is, where it's going, as best as we can tell, and what needs to be done.
We'll get to those. What your thoughts are on that in the next segment. What are you finding from as you meet people? What are you finding your reception to people? Because to most of the people in Fairfield, to most of the voters, you're probably new to town.
That's right. I'm the new guy. There's no question about that. Even though I'm an old guy,
right?
And I do say this about Fairfield, especially people I can recognize and remember their names. I say, boy, you know, Fairfield hasn't changed very much. Except for one thing. And they'll look at me and say, what? And I say, everybody looks older.
I like that.
Yeah. So they
That's
all,
true.
They laugh. They laugh. And then, they'll say, some people have said, are you Mike's son? And I say, no.
You're a little brother,
I'm,
though.
I'm Mike's little brother.
Yeah, little brother. Yeah.
And then I say that, and they say, really? And I said, yes, and I'm sorry. And everybody gets a big laugh out of that, and then we talk about my rather extroverted big brother.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, you got a little of that too, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I get accused of it.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So folks are open to have you found folks to be open and giving you are they giving you an earful? What are you getting?
Well, I get different responses, of course. I'm the new guy. A lot of people don't know who I am, or they don't know my background. That's why I did the big article in Outlook, so people would know. And the campaign, you know, the press articles and,
sure.
and the advertisements and all that kind of thing. And the reason I'm here, same thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they don't know, but so they figure that out. And so I get typical responses are, thank God you're running. Responses are of the candidates when we looked at Outlook and saw the comparative qualifications.
Mm-hmm. You're getting a good response.
I'm getting a good response there. The other side of it is I've had people come up to me and say, we don't want another D executive. And I get that. And I also get, unless you promise me that you will not raise taxes and not raise utility rates, I won't vote for you.
See, I wondered about that.
Yeah, because I mean, Fairfield's in a depressed state.
Yeah,
you know, you have 6 years ago there were 600 jobs at Airtex.
Right,
and a couple of weeks ago there were 35.
Yeah, and that's ending pretty shortly.
And that's ending pretty shortly. So you have and that the effect that has on the community, on the retail merchants in the community. On the whole governmental structure of revenue and all the rest of that stuff is very significant. I can get into a lot of numbers, but it's very significant, and Fairfield has to adjust to that.
Right.
And they've been very slow making those adjustments, which is why Fairfield's in the financial state that it's in.
Tell me a little bit about the since we're getting to know you. Tell me a little bit about the pastor side. How did you become a pastor?
Well, going back to my grandfather, his name's on the cornerstone of the First Methodist Church.
Right.
And very active. So, and Janie's family has gone to the Martin Creek Church her entire life. They
right.
started there in 1937.
Right.
So so we both came. You can't be born a Christian.
Right.
But if you could be, Jane and I were.
Right. Right.
And we grew up in strong Christian active families. So after I got out of college and started working in the construction business.
Better lean back up.
worked in the construction business, I investigated and got an opportunity to assume a entry pastoral role while I went to seminary up in northern Illinois. I prayed about that a lot. This was back in the late 70s, and I decided that that was not my calling at the time.
Yeah.
So I stayed active in the church, and I've been lay leaders and deacons and all that, and elders and all that kind of stuff.
Study group and that kind of
that stuff. Yeah. And been a substitute preacher, and all that thing, all that kind of thing. So that's our whole lives. We did that, taught Sunday schools and, just very active in our church lives, and raised our children the same. Well, Jane, just a little sideline, Jane was experienced a instantaneously physically observable healing.
Really?
In 1984. And is big deal, big time healing.
Yeah.
And we're in a typical conservative Protestant background, which is what I was. She was Church of the Brethren, and I was a Methodist. Both are similar. The Baptist, Presbyterians are about the same. And that was the Pentecostal bent of the Christian faith. And I got exposed to a full gospel businessman, which was it's pretty much defunct now, but in the late 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, they were very active. It was a lay businessman's group that had a Pentecostal perspective. And through that organization, Jane got picked out of a crowd of 350 people, prayed over, and was instantaneously healed of a five-year serious health problem.
Wow.
And that, Wiles right, it changes your perspective.
I would think it would.
About God and how the Holy Spirit works on the planet today.
Yeah.
And so we followed that, and I became very active in that organization. And then
Did that become I'm thinking like Bill McCartney's Promise Keepers, because, from Colorado.
Sure. Related organization.
Related organization. Okay.
So he was very active in full gospel business.
Yeah, I kind of
full gospel change, like they do.
But that sounds like something that Bill McCartney would have been into
time. And again, it's when I say a Pentecostal perspective, it's the Holy Spirit's alive and well on planet Earth.
Yeah.
So we did that, still stayed active in the church. And so when we came back here, the opportunity came to preach out.
To help out.
At this country church, and that's what I did. So still doing it, still preparing sermons.
That's fascinating. I've got Tim Sullivan here. We're talking on the Bruce Dickey Show. He's running for mayor. We're talking, we're getting to know him. We'll be back here on the Bruce Dickey Show on AM 1390 and WFIW FM back in just a bit.
Long neck bottom.
Let go my hand.
And jukebox don't start playing that song again. There's a girl at home who loves me. You know she won't understand. Long neck bottom,
let go my hand.
Hey, borrow a mirror on the wall. Go stare at someone else. Don't show the world the fool I am. Just keep it to yourself. Long neck bottom,
let go my hand.
Won't you buy? There's a girl at home who loves me. You know she won't understand. Long neck bottom,
let go my hand.
Can't learn. Long neck bottle,
let go my hand.
Have jukebox don't stop playing that song again.
Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW FM. Appreciate you tuning in. It's 9:46. It's 33 degrees. My guest across the way is Tim Sullivan. We've been talking about getting to know Tim a little bit, talking about all kinds of different things. And Tim, let's talk a little bit about you have a pretty fully detailed plan, or goals for the city of Fairfield, don't you? Tell me a little bit about the plan if you become mayor.
Well, as an engineer, you define the problem.
Right.
You
work the problem.
You do the analysis, you work the problem, and you come up with possible solutions. And then you analyze which is the most likely solution to succeed and will work within the time frame that the problem has to be solved.
Yeah.
And that's basically what my report is. So the definition of the problem is as Airtex, Wayne County, and utility costs. So that defines the problem. The solutions to the problem that everybody talks about all the time, people want fuel taxes are down, sales taxes are down. You can't increase the sales tax without a referendum because Fairfield is a non-home municipality according to state law. Property taxes are already sky high in Illinois, and Springfield's probably going to make them higher.
Right.
So that leaves you only one alternative, which a lot of arrows point to that as a solution, is utility rates haven't been adjusted for 6 years.
Whereas everything else has gone.
Everything else gone up. Wages are up roughly. The city wages are up about 2.7% a year under the union contract. The health insurance costs have gone up 60% in the last 6 years.
Yeah.
You got all kinds, and everything else costs more. I mean, fuel, equipment, everything costs more. So, and the aldermen have been approached by both Mickey Bora and Mayor Griswold to adjust those rates on an incremental basis, the utility rates. And they've been turned down. So there's been 6 years that those rates have not been significantly adjusted. There's more detail about that that's negative in its scope,
yeah.
But that's the bottom line. So the solution, which is within the power of the aldermen to do, is to figure out what they need to do to get Fairfield on a sound financial footing in terms of dollars.
Right.
And I've worked some of those numbers up. I've had the support of the treasurer and the auditor. And my suggestion is, whether I'm mayor or not, that the aldermen solicit, they can use my information, but they've got Bora and Griswold and the treasurer and the auditor. I've been talking to all those people, and they're basically on the same page what the solution is. The actual numbers and how to get there, what those exact numbers are, as a citizen, I don't have access to all that to be able to figure that out. I can. Right now, I don't have access.
Right.
So the overall solution is, as I mentioned earlier, the utility costs exceed the revenue coming through
Coming from power?
Utility
from power bills?
From your utility
yeah.
bill, which is gas, yeah. water, sewer, and electric.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so those costs appear to be exceeding. Notice how I said that.
Yeah.
All the arrows say that's true.
Right.
Okay. And the treasurer and the auditor agree with that statement. So that the cost of supplying our utility services that everybody uses and consumes exceeds the revenue that's coming in from them because they haven't raised the rates for 6 years.
Right.
Had in hindsight, Mickey Bora and Chuck Griswold have recommended incremental rates constantly over that 6 year period. It was never passed. It's kind of a kick the can situation.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're at a point that the surplus is below, way below
where you need to have
where it needs to be. And where it needs to be, I've derived some of those numbers. They're big numbers.
Yeah.
Because it's been going on for 6 years.
And it's a big town.
And it's a big town.
With 76 employees and $23 million budget, yeah. you need a pretty nice little 5, surplus.
And 5,000 people. And then, then there's all kinds of other things, but I tried to explain an outlook about fixed cost and variable cost. So the argument that the solution is to cut the forces, you know, cut city personnel,
right.
cut. Well, the fixed cost perspective shows that that's false. For example, right now there's five people, this past month there's five people at the new filtration plant.
Mm-hmm.
It runs 16 hours a day, okay, so 7 days a week.
Okay, so you're looking at 104 hours.
Okay.
112 hours.
Okay, so what they do is they stagger shift those five employees to keep that filter plant running.
Right.
To produce good, clean, safe water.
Right, which we got to have.
So I can tell you as an engineer who's built water plants, it's probably not a good idea to start cutting those forces at the filtration plant.
Right.
Okay. You have the same thing with gas. the gas supply operation, though they're not 24/7. The sewer plant, 24/7 operation.
Sure.
Okay, you've got that. If that sewer plant is not managed right, the EPA comes over you. There's big fines, you know, and you've got to be
get into bigger
trouble.
You got
a responsible environmental aspect. So there's a lot of places that you cannot cut because there's fixed cost. The other part of it is Kinchelow, the auditor, has in his audit, the 16 audit, that Airtex's departure had affected the revenues in the utility sector 9.8%. Not my number, his number. So if you lower revenues 9.8%, that doesn't...
You got to adjust for that.
That doesn't change how many people it takes to run the water plant. That doesn't change how many people it takes to maintain the electrical distribution in town. That doesn't change how many people it takes to run the sewer plant. But it does mean your fixed costs go up, which means that the rates have to be adjusted mm-hmm. to deal for that.
Right.
Now, if they had been adjusted incrementally, 2 or 3% per year for the past 6 years, I probably wouldn't be running for mayor.
Are you looking at an incremental, or are you looking at a pretty good size bop to start, or what are you thinking?
My analysis says incremental is insufficient.
Insufficient.
I think that with the support of the auditor and the treasurer, that a number should be computed, and the bonding company's got to be advised that we're out of covenant. So you bring all the players in, and you build a plan to recover over a 2-year period.
Tell me how,
and you do it by a surcharge.
Tell me a little bit about how this council has to be involved in all of this. And I mean, you said that Mayor Bora and Mayor Griswold both tried to get something like this done. How are you going to be able to be to work with the council in a fashion that they couldn't get it done? How do you see yourself able to get something like that done?
Well, you know, I'm capable of doing PowerPoint demonstrations with charts and graphs and all that kind of stuff to show that without a doubt that this is the plan. And what I'm trying to do is project 3 years into the future.
Right.
And that you do a plan like this, you've got to be looking forward to what's happening. You have to define the monies that you need to get you back where you need to be. It's a big number.
Yeah.
And then you define if the bonding company goes along, they accept it. Now, the council, you're right, the council hasn't done that. So when people ask me that, I say, well, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Right.
So the downside is if the council doesn't fix this problem, the surplus will continue to decline to the point there's not enough cash to make payroll.
They're going to have issues down the road.
That's right. And those issues are within 12 months.
Really?
So the time to deal with it was really 6 years ago. The time you have to deal with it is now. The other side of it is the bonding companies and the people who are loaning this money Fairfield has $32 million in long-term debt.
Right.
Which is normal. That's okay. But you got to maintain those requirements, and they have the ability to come in and kind of force you
sure,
to take that.
Yes, they do.
So it's kind of like not paying your mortgage.
That's exactly right.
And people understand that. So the solution here, in my view, which is not a popular solution. Like I said, I have people tell me, boy, if you want to raise utility rates and all that stuff, we're not going to vote for you. What I'm saying is, do you like having water 24/7?
Yeah.
Do you like having electricity 24/7? And right now it appears, which I've verified with the people who know the numbers, that is the treasurer and the auditor, that utility costs are exceeding revenues. So you got to fix that. You know, just because you don't want to pay $2.20 a gallon for gas, you only want to pay $1.50.
You got to pay the $2.27.
You're going to pay the $2.27, and the aldermen control that. The mayor does not have a vote unless there's a tie. So the aldermen are confronted with this, and that has to be done. Now, if they don't do it, very bad things begin to happen fairly quickly.
I'll be darned. I've got Tim Sullivan here wrapping things up here on the Bruce Dickey Show this morning. Tell me in the last little bit here, I guess, how do you get in new business into town? How are you going to get new business? Just real quick. I mean, you mentioned we've gone for large manufacturers. That's not happening. So basically you become more open to smaller people too, I guess, or what?
Yes. In meeting with the people involved in TIF and the Fairfield Wayne County Area Development Group, there's a Wabash group that I haven't met with. But there's, and then you have all citizens group, the Spiff, right. the Spiffy group, the tax group.
Right.
You've got all these groups, Fairfield Retail Merchants Association, Chamber of Commerce. You've got these groups that are in place, and they're all trying to solve the problem. The mayor legally has very little power to do this. He has to do it by motivation and leadership and participation in the plan. The folk, you have to recognize where Illinois is. That's part of it. You got to look at where the probability of success is. We've got to support our local businesses and keep them here in town, help them grow, ask them for whatever assistance we can legally give them. Again, it's hard to do it when you're short on money.
Sure.
And to, and that's the solution until Illinois, sometime in the unknown future, straightens out its economic mess.
When's that going to happen? You told me that, we'll both know, won't we?
Well, I'll start praying about it.
Tim, thanks very much for coming on today. Great job. Good luck to you, okay?
Thank you very much.
That's Bruce Dickey's show for today, and that's Tim Sullivan. We'll be back tomorrow. I've got the NCAA preview show. Have a great day.